The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purpose of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Program material may not be edited for use in promotional material by any political party or other organization, and may not be used in any edited form that could mislead or misinform an audience or viewer, or which does not present a balanced portrayal of the proceedings in the House. Video program material may only be used with its original audio components, and no other audio material may be added to video material used. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
And I'd ask the members to give them a warm welcome.
We welcome all our guests to the gallery and hope that they enjoy this afternoon's proceedings. Orders of the day, oral questions put... Oh. Thank you very much. Oral questions put by members to ministers. The time now is 12:56. We will finish at 1:56. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, earlier today we learned that the President of Emera made a 7% increase to his total compensation, Mr. Speaker, which is equal to almost $3 million per year. And the President of Nova Scotia Power, Mr. Speaker, has had a 23% increase in his total compensation package, Mr. Speaker, bringing it to $1.15 million. My question to the Premier, does the Premier think power bill increases over the next 3 years are justifiable when Nova Scotia Power executives are making millions of dollars?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out to the Leader of the Opposition in the past, executive bonuses, incentives to senior executives of Nova Scotia Power are not part of the rate application, nor will they be part of the basis on which rates are decided.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, their salaries are, and I know the Premier knows, and so are the executive bonuses. They were only excluded for 1 year, and that was last year, and the Premier knows that, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Nova Scotia Power President's compensation is $1.15 million a year, Mr. Speaker, a 23% increase. At the same time, this company is going before the URB for consecutive increase, a 20% increase, Mr. Speaker, since they've taken power. Nova Scotians are struggling to meet the need to meet their power bills, Mr. Speaker, at the same time they find out that the executives of this company are making millions of dollars. And ironically, Mr. Speaker, that's only one executive. It would be helpful if this company would disclose the entire compensation package that Nova Scotia Power is receiving for all of their executives, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is further proof that a performance value audit is needed of Nova Scotia Power, Mr. Speaker. As Nova Scotians struggle to meet their energy costs that they're being their families, Mr. Speaker, it is time that we do a performance value audit of Nova Scotia Power. And my question to the Premier, will he order a value performance audit of Nova Scotia Power immediately?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I have said before that there have been audits already completed of the utility. This morning on one of the popular radio shows, they interviewed the consumer advocate, who of course represents consumers at the Utility and Review Board. They actually asked the exact question that the Leader of the Opposition, in fact, they referred to the Leader of the Opposition's question, and the consumer advocate said that, in fact, there had been a lot of audits done by of the utility, that was not the issue. that what was required at the Utility and Review Board was a diligence with respect to the examination of the rate filing, which of course, Mr. Speaker, is why the Consumer Advocate was created. It is why the government is there to oversee the rate applications to ensure that the rates that are decided are fair, that they take into account only the appropriate expenses.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Consumer Advocate said is that aspects of the rate filing go under audit each and every time, Mr. Speaker. There has not been a total performance value audit done of Nova Scotia Power, Mr. Speaker, in a number of years, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I said yesterday that Nova Scotia Power executives have a responsibility to the shareholders, and they do their job very well, Mr. Speaker. But the people in this House and the Premier of this province have a responsibility to ratepayers, Mr. Speaker, and he's not doing his job, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, instead of defending these massive increases, Mr. Speaker, that the executives of Nova Scotia Power are taking out of the pockets of every Nova Scotian, why doesn't he stand up for Nova Scotia ratepayers and demand a performance value audit of this company?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, that's exactly what we're doing. We're standing up for ratepayers, ensuring that there is a stable generation and transmission system in this province that will get us off of fossil fuels, that will create stable, long-term energy prices for Nova Scotians, that will give a competitive advantage to industry and business here in the province, Mr. Speaker. I only wish, of course, that the Liberal Party had a thought about that when they were bringing forward the legislation that created Emera and Nova Scotia Power. That would have been useful.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we now know that the Halifax Regional School Board has been forced to deal with a $10.2 million budget shortfall because of cuts imposed on them by the NDP. The Premier told all Nova Scotians that cuts were enrollment-based. In fact, Mr. Speaker, we know that Halifax Regional School Board is going to lose 154 teachers as a result of their cuts. Only 25 of those teachers are losing their jobs because of enrollment-based decline. The rest, all the others other than those 25, are the result of cuts beyond enrollment-based cuts. And in fact, I will quote from the chair of the Halifax Regional School Board, and I'll table this, Mr. Irving Carvery, a very wise and able chair of a school board, I might add, Mr. Speaker, who says, if declining student population determined the amount of cuts board should have received, then our board should have only received a cut that relates to 25 positions, not 174. Very wise school board chair. My question to the Premier, why did the Premier tell Nova Scotians teacher cuts were enrollment related when, in fact, they're not?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, they are enrollment-based. Of course, the figures that the leader of the Conservative Party is referring to and that the board referred to was at over a year, Mr. Speaker. In fact, the decline in Nova Scotia and in this board, although, as the board chair has pointed out, not as pronounced in Halifax as in other parts of the municipality, has, in fact, been going on for a number of years, Mr. Speaker. That is why I assume that the board chose to find savings in the manner in which they decided to find them.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, if the Premier believes that answer, he should have run for Chair of the School Board and not for Premier of all Nova Scotia, because the fact remains 25 teachers are enrollment-related, 174 teachers in total are being cut because of decisions made by his government. And it's not only the teachers, Mr. Speaker. The Premier also told all Nova Scotians that cuts would be at the administrative level and would not affect the classroom. But in fact, in addition to the teachers that are being cut, there are 21 school-based support positions being cut, that is resource teachers and coaches and so on, 8.5 custodial positions, 6 library support specialists, all of these important services to kids in the classroom. That is in addition to the obvious increase in class sizes that will come when you cut 174 teachers out of the system when only 25 are related to enrollment. My question to the Premier, like my first question, why did he tell Nova Scotians that these cuts would not be at the classroom level when, in fact, they so obviously are?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I'm I understand why it is that the leader of the Conservative Party is asking the question, although I believe that he is not properly representing the reality of it. The reality is that we have historic lows in class sizes in the province. That will continue to be the case. It will continue to be the case in the Halifax Regional School Board. The decisions around how to deal with the budget allocation, of course, belongs to the school board. They have pointed out that no teachers will, in fact, lose their jobs, that these are positions that are being eliminated, but, in fact, they will be able to retain all of the teachers they have, all the probationary teachers that they have. Mr. Speaker, we understand that change is sometimes upsetting to people, but change we must. And I know that there are those who will defend the status quo to their last breath. But if we are to have a system that is truly going to meet the needs of the people, the system needs to change.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, what is upsetting to people is when they have a Premier that tells them the cuts are only enrollment related when they're not, and they have a Premier that tells them that they won't affect the classroom when they do. That is what is upsetting to the students and the parents of Halifax Regional School Board. Yesterday, the Premier was questioning the reading skills of some members on this side of the House. Let's just look at the facts. When you cut 174 teachers out of the school board, when only 25 are related to enrollment, then obviously the class sizes are going to go up. That is a matter of simple math. Maybe the Premier needs to go back to math class to find that out for himself, Mr. Speaker. But it's not just, of course, Halifax Regional School Board. The chair of the Chignecto Central Regional School Board said yesterday, and I quote, "The education system, with the latest rounds of cuts, is moving 15 or 20 years backwards." And I will table that for the benefit of the Premier and the House. That is where the Premier is taking our school system, backwards, not forwards. But my question to the Premier, will he review the spending of his own Department of Education before he takes our classrooms another 20 years backwards?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I pointed out, there are very significant declines. There was a review done of the Chignecto School Board by Mr. Stewart that was released. It demonstrated that even though the number of students in that board had decreased by something like 2,225, I believe, or 2,250, that the number of teachers in the system had only gone down by 10, and that in fact the number of hours that had been allocated for teachers' assistants in the classroom had actually gone up by something like 146 hours, I believe was the figure. So far from taking back the system, we are investing in it. If that is the opinion of the school board chair, then that is an indictment of her own policy.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, it's a sad day in our province, Mr. Speaker, when our Premier won't stand up for Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker. The Premier refuses to stand up against Nova Scotia power. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier, will the Premier personally step in and participate in the approaching rate hearing and say no to power rate increases in 2013 and 2014?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Leader of the Opposition should know that there is a utility and review board process that is one that is designed to take into account the requirements that the utility has in order to be able to fulfill its mandate, in order to be able to supply electricity to the people of Nova Scotia. That is a job that is fulfilled by the board based on the evidence that comes before it. Surely the leader of the opposition is not suggesting that for political reasons the premier of the province ought to be involved in that process.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Sure, Mr. Speaker, I'm not sure defending Nova Scotians is for political reasons, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we've heard today that the President of Nova Scotia Power has had a 23% increase in his executive compensation package, Mr. Speaker.
There are seven other executives to this company. We don't even know what their compensation package is, Mr. Speaker. As a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, the Premier is unwilling to mandate a performance value audit of this company so that Nova Scotians can be reassured that this company has done like every other Nova Scotia company has had to do, and that is look inward for savings and not look into the pockets of Nova Scotians for more money each and every time. Mr. Speaker, we're not asking the Premier to intervene to do something to break the law. We're asking the Premier to intervene to stand up for Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Premier, will you stand up for Nova Scotians and say no to another rate increase?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we're standing up for Nova Scotians every single day when it comes to power rates. And it's hard to believe the Leader of the Opposition could stand here and make that kind of a submission when it was him and his party that voted against taking the HST off of electricity. It is hard to believe.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it was this party that didn't mislead Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, it was that government that said they're going to reduce HST, Mr. Speaker, and then add their own NDP electricity tax. Mr. Speaker, it was that government when they were in opposition who said they would put a stop to power rate increases, Mr. Speaker. Since they've been the government of Nova Scotia, power rates have gone up 20%, Mr. Speaker. As a matter of fact, Mr. Speaker, we're on record to have at least one power rate increase every year since they've been in office, Mr. Speaker. They're batting 1,000, Mr. Speaker. They're batting 1,000. My question to the Premier, when is he going to stop being the chief apologist for Nova Scotia Power and stand up for Nova Scotians?
Yeah. Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians know that they have no greater champion when it comes to energy crisis than the people in this caucus. It is the people in this caucus who took the HST off of home electricity. Not just home electricity, but also energy. It is that party over there that voted against taking the HST off. If they had their choice, electricity would be 8% higher today than it is.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Last week at the Public Accounts Committee, I asked the Chair of the Utility and Review Board whether or not a change in legislation would be needed to ensure the Premier's commitment that the URB fully reviewed the Maritime Link project can be met. The Chair said that he felt legislation would be needed unless it became an NSP project, and even in that case, they would only review part of the project, and I'll table that. Thank you. The same day, I asked the Premier whether he would be willing to introduce legislation to correct that issue, and the Premier said, and I quote, "I've done my best to explain to the member opposite why he's wrong regarding legislation being needed, and that isn't what the Chair of the Utility and Review Board said, even though he did, and I just tabled that. So, Mr. Speaker, did the Premier just not know that legislation would be needed, or did he mislead the House?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I said, that day legislation was not required. It could have been done via regulation. We chose to make sure that it was a nice, clean package, one that the opposition could understand, Mr. Speaker. So the bill is currently before the House, and we look forward to their endorsement of it and its speedy passage.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, even the Department's Deputy Minister said that you were wrong yesterday and said that they couldn't review the Mr. Speaker, he said they wouldn't be able to review the portions of the project outside of Nova Scotia under any legislation currently. Mr. Speaker, all we're asking for is the Premier to admit that he made a mistake and he didn't check the facts before he spoke. And frankly, Mr. Speaker, everybody makes mistakes. And Mr. Speaker, I'm sure Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the Nova Scotians would appreciate it if the Premier would just simply say he made a mistake, they're correcting it, introducing the legislation, and we move on. So, Mr. Speaker, will the Premier please admit that he was mistaken when he said legislation wasn't necessary for a complete review of the project?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, of course, that is not, as I pointed out, not what the chair of the board said. So I'll quote from the actual Hansard. It says, I hope and expect that we will be given our normal mandate under Section 35 of the Public Utilities Act to make whatever inquiry we think we need to make, Mr. Gurnham said. Mr. Speaker, I'll give this back to them so that perhaps the member opposite can read it. Obviously, under the provisions of the legislation, the Utility and Review Board would have been free to do an analysis of that project, as I pointed out. But I also pointed out, for greater certainty and to ensure that this was placed before the people, because I think it is a very important project. I'm hopeful that the members of the opposition will support it. We introduced the bill, which is a good bill, and I would hope they would quickly endorse it.
The honourable member for Dartmouth East on his final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, what the Premier forgot to say in that quote was that was in part of the answer to the question, but also said that would only apply if Nova Scotia Power made the application, and it would still not allow a review outside the part of the project outside of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, the difference, and the Deputy Minister of Energy said this yesterday, the difference with the legislation that was introduced yesterday is that this will allow the URB, if Cabinet decides through regulation, to review the parts of the project that are outside of Nova Scotia and allow a review of the project if it is not submitted by Nova Scotia Power, which is an entirely different issue. The legislation introduced yesterday addresses an issue that the Public Utilities Act doesn't cover. So, Mr. Speaker, the Premier is going to have to make regulations on this and decide what the Utility and Review Board should review related to the Muskrat Falls project. Will the Premier promise and commit in this House that the regulations governing the review will not just be a free pass, but will ensure the project is fully evaluated, both the benefits and the risks?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as I said here in the House, and you know, the member for Dartmouth East is likes to cherry pick various pieces of what people have said, and he tries to interpret them in ways that are creative is the best possible word, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, I said that there would be a complete review of the project. It is now completely obvious that there will be a complete review of the project. I am satisfied. I would think that the member opposite would be satisfied, but if he's not satisfied with that, I hope that he is at least satisfied now that he may content himself with the idea that his time in this House hasn't been completely wasted.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, I just heard the Premier say that he hopes that members on this side of the House support the Muskrat Falls project. I just want to point out that, unlike the Premier, we asked that very basic common sense question, how much will the power cost, before we make up our minds about expensive projects like that. The fact is, the Premier is committed to this project without knowing the cost himself, either the cost of the project or how much the electricity will cost when it reaches Nova Scotians' homes. Now he's planning a partial review, but he has kept to himself the power to set the scope and terms of that review, which is hardly an independent review of the project, Mr. Speaker. That is the kind of neglect that leads to skyrocketing power rates. So my question to the Premier, why did he reject the option of doing an independent review of the entire Muskrat Falls projects, the costs and the benefits?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I pointed out a number of times to the leader of the Conservative Party that until the design is fixed, until the costs are known, it's not possible to do the kind of review that he's talked about. But, you know, Mr. Speaker, we do have on record what it is that the leader of the Conservative Party has said in the past. And this is what he said on March 8, 2011 to the National Press Club. He said, I am an opposition leader. This is one of those times when I actually completely agree with what the government is doing, and I have said so in the legislature, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
You know what, of course, Mr. Speaker, but like every other Nova Scotian. When we agree with something, when we like a new car, as I know the Premier likes to make that analogy, we always ask, how much will it cost? But that is the one question he won't ask on our behalf. That is how he is different from us, Mr. Speaker. We may like something, but we still want to ask, how much will it cost before we go any further?
No, no, that's good.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday the Premier said it's a little like asking what the price of next year's car is when it hasn't even been designed. The problem is that's exactly what the people of Nova Scotia pay the Premier to ask. How much will it cost? He doesn't know, but he's already committed to the project. So my question remains, will he commit to an independent review of the Muskrat Falls project so that we will all know how much it costs?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, that is entirely the point of the piece of legislation that has been introduced. I want to read another quote for you from the leader of the Conservative Party, also at the National Press Club on March 8, 2011. He said, coal is dirty and expensive and getting more expensive, and electricity prices continuing to climb in my region as a result, which is a hardship for our industrial base and for manufacturing. This agreement provides an opportunity to give Atlantic Canada a long-term fixed price to a clean, green supply of electricity, Mr. Speaker. I agree with that.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, for the first time in umpteen question periods, the Premier is finally saying something that makes sense in answer to a question. The problem is he still hasn't said how much it will cost. And he's now going to do a partial review, but he keeps to himself the power to decide what that review will cover. That problem, Mr. Speaker, is that Nova Scotians have been down this road before. He cooked up a consultation with Nova Scotians about taxes that led to the highest HST in all of Canada. That cost Nova Scotians $1 billion. He cooked up a Labour Management Review Committee that led to first contract arbitration, something every other business in the province said was wrong, and now he's going to pull the wool over their eyes again. For all those reasons, Mr. Speaker, just like in those circumstances, he's already made up his mind, regardless of the cost. My question to the Premier, will he do the right thing this time and permit a complete independent review of the Muskrat Falls project?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, of course there will be a review, as was pointed out. That's what the legislation is about. It brings it before the Independent Utility and Review Board. I'd like to just read one more thing from the address to the National Press Club by the leader of the Conservative Party. This is what he said. This is what he said. He said about Muskrat Falls, this may be the single greatest way that by working together we can kickstart real, true, sustainable, long-term economic growth for our region. I commit my party to making sure we will use this as the start of a whole new age, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Listen, we'll stay late if you read the whole speech.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier made a promise to cut the HST to 13% by 2015 based on a projected or anticipated or hoped-for surplus that may or may not exist at some point in the future. The surplus is expected because of improved economic growth in 2013. RBC says that growth will be led by Deep Panuk, Shell, the shipyard, and the Donkin Mine. Mr. Speaker, the shipyard and the Donkin Mine, two of the four projects needed to generate a surplus, are now behind schedule. My question for the Premier is, with two crucial projects behind schedule now, how can this government promise a tax cut in 2014 and 15?
Honourable the Premier.
through good steward and management of the resources of the province. Thank you for the question.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I think the Premier knows there are a lot of unknowns that are coming up in the future. Financially, it's very hard to predict what's going to happen. We have the cost of the federal prison plan that's coming down, the federal costs that are going to be downloaded to us. We don't know the magnitude of those costs. We'll see definite decreases in health transfers coming from a new federal agreement starting in 2014. Again, we don't know the full impacts of those. The Premier said the province will take a financial hit if demographics are not factored into the health transfers right off the bat because of our aging population. Clearly, there's a lot this government does not know about the future threats to our finances. Mr. Speaker, the NDP broke their last tax promise without having all of the information, and now we see again the NDP are making promises without all the information. My question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is without knowing the cost of the Conservative crime bill and without knowing more about the new health accord, how can the people of Nova Scotia trust your tax promise this time?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, in fact, we do know what the projections for the health accord are and what the increases will be going out the next couple of years. It's in the longer term that we are concerned about their decreasing a portion of the federal health transfers. Of course, those are concerns for all of us. What I can say is that Mr. Speaker, for the last 3 years, we have met and exceeded the budget targets every single year.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
They don't believe it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, on March 20th, 2012, the Finance Minister rejected cutting the HST because he said it would be, quote, simply too much to consider, end quote. The Finance Minister said it was too expensive and it was also economically the wrong thing to do. He said, quote, when you talk to people about if you're going to reduce taxes, which one? The great majority of people will say sales tax. And so it's not like I'm going to say, yeah, but the economists know better than you, end quote. Only 2 weeks later, the Premier stood in this building and promised an HST cut. First, the NDP promised not to raise taxes, and then they raised them. Then the NDP Finance Minister says that there should be no tax cuts. And then, in a quick about-face, they promised to cut them. Mr. Speaker, my question is, why, with so many mixed messages and broken promises, can we trust the NDP government now?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, in fact, the Minister of Finance has produced for the province a budget which year over year has set targets. They have met those targets. In fact, we are the first government, I think, in it was 40 years or 50 yards of years, maybe ever, to have come in under budget 3 successive years, Mr. Speaker. But one thing we do know for sure, and that is taking the approach that the Liberals are taking, the official opposition is taking by promising to spend hundreds of millions of dollars more money is not the road either to a balanced budget or to being able to give tax relief to Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question, Mr. Speaker, will be to the Acting Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism. Mr. Speaker, this government wants to keep the process around the Ship Starts Here contract quiet. They're keeping it secret. On March the 8th, the Progressive Conservatives Caucus submitted a FOIPOP application to the Department of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism, asking for the minutes of the Ship Starts Here Steering Committee, a group of minutes that only had eight meetings, Mr. Speaker. On April 11th, we learned that the ERDT decided to extend the 30-day response time for the application to an additional 30 days, to May 11th, tomorrow. Today, Mr. Speaker, our caucus learned that all the information requested has been gathered. They actually found the binder. But we also learned we won't get those minutes now for another 20 days. So my question to the minister, will he ensure that the ERDT lift the veil of secrecy on the Ship Starts Here and commit to delivering the information before tomorrow's deadline?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage acting on behalf of the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think all Nova Scotians should feel proud about our province being selected to build these ships. With any freedom of information requests, Mr. Speaker, there are procedures and policies in place, and we're going to continue to follow those, and we're going to respond in a timely manner to ensure that we have an open and transparent policy here in the province when we deal with FOIPOP requests, and we'll continue to do that.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the meetings in question happened over a span of 56 days. Yet, it's taking almost twice that time for the minister to gather and deliver the information. Now, what's the big secret? My question again, and I'll ask it again. Will the minister ensure that his department meets its obligation and delivers the minutes of those 8 meetings before tomorrow's deadline?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I thank the member for that question. No question, as a department that receives a request for FOIPOP information, the province is following the proper procedures by consulting with third parties. We're doing our due diligence when it comes to this request, and we'll continue to do that with future requests. We will, in the appropriate amount of time, respond to the Freedom of Information request, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on his final supplementary.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. You know, it's funny that the government was able to plot, plan, and execute $600,000 plus campaign in a shorter time than it takes them to cough up the minutes for 8 meetings. It's also strange, Mr. Speaker, that it only took minutes for the Minister of Community Services to put a matter of privacy, personal information up on her website about an individual. Now, I want to ask, Mr. Speaker, why the double standard? When it's information about the executive director of Talbot House, it's open season. When it's information about how this government spends taxpayer dollars, it takes months to get simple information. So I'll ask one more time, Mr. Speaker, will the minister stop making a sham out of the FOIPOP process and deliver the minutes to our caucus before tomorrow's deadline?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We're very clear on the commitment with when it comes to FOIPOP in the province. The only thing that's really confusing, Mr. Speaker, is the third party's commitment to the Ship Start Here program or even the contract for Irving Shipyard, Mr. Speaker. We're going to take all advantage of the thousands of good jobs that are going to be created by the announcement of this contract, Mr. Speaker. I just wish that party would get behind it for once.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, in the spring of 2011, the Strait Area Women's Place opened its doors to provide a long overdue service in our community. The center provides service to women and girls facing adversity such as poverty, unemployment, barriers to education, and violence. The precarious economic situation in the Strait has made this community resource a much-needed institution and one that women and girls in the community turn to. Sadly, the Strait Area Women's Place funding ended on March 31st, and the good work that the center did in the community will come to an end. Given that there are no other options for these services in the area, will the Minister of Community Services see to it that these services for women and girls can continue in the area and fund the Strait Area Women's Place?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, this particular funding project was actually a pilot project that was funded through another source, and that funding has been completed, and that pilot was completed.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Speaker, we're all blatantly aware of that. The question is whether the Minister of Community Services will find the funding to continue the service. So, Speaker, the Strait area has been dealt some tough blows lately. Businesses have closed, employers are downsizing or disappearing, and this has undoubtedly had an effect on families in the region. In a letter to supporters of the Women's Centre, the Minister for Community Services says, quote, "I wish I could do more," end quote. Mr. Speaker, the Minister knows that she can do more and she should do more. So my question is, will the Minister reconsider her decision and meet with members of the community to really see the impact this Women's Centre has made in the Strait and how important it is to maintain its funding?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I certainly know the importance of such services. That's why this government brought in $500,000 on an annualized basis for the transition houses and women's centres. And certainly, I'm always available to meet with organizations.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on his final supplementary.
Speaker, organizations in the area who know the value of the Strait Area Women's Place have written to support the continued funding of the centre. Antigonish Women's Resource Centre and Sexual Assault Services Association want to see it continue and have written letters of support to the Minister. Strait Area Transit wrote to the Minister on the issue saying, quote, "We cannot emphasize enough the importance of having the appropriate supports in place, such as a Strait Area Women's Place," end quote. And as well, the Mayor of Mulgrave, who I'm sure this government is aware of, has also written to the Minister of Community Services asking that this service remains in our community. So my question is, will the Minister reverse her decision, support women and girls in the Strait area, and ensure that this organization can continue to carry out their important work by providing them with stable funding?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure that the member opposite understands that it creates a very difficult position when a pilot project is funded by another source, and when that project finishes, then the expectation is on the government to pick up those costs. So it's something that can create difficulties when you're looking at the budget situation. And so that's what we have to consider as a department, because this is not just the first time that this has happened in our province. It happens often when there's federal funding that may be just a 1 year or from another source. So what they should do is go back to the other source of funding, because that's what a pilot project is usually when you run a pilot project, the hope is when it's analyzed at the end of that project that it is successful, then that particular funder that initiated it would continue on. However, as I said, we're always willing to meet and have open discussions with any community organization. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria, the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when asked about the future of Talbot House on Tuesday, the Minister of Community Services said she'd already given us all the information. She simply had nothing more to add. Now, Mr. Speaker, that's funny, considering how many Nova Scotians, including members from this party, have been left with unanswered questions. Mr. Speaker, Talbot House has been put through the ringer by this minister's department. All they've got to show for their 53 years dedicated to helping rehabilitate young men is a tainted reputation, false accusations, and closed doors. Mr. Speaker, the minister was wrong to think she had given us all the information. We asked a simple question with no answer, so we're going to ask it again. Can she tell us now whether she plans on restoring funding to Talbot House, or if she'll make them reapply through the RFP process?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I want to clarify again, because I have done this over and over again, that this government and the department and this minister did not close Talbot House. The Board of Directors made that decision. The review is a review on organizational procedures. That is it. The tie-in between that and any allegations was never done by this department. It was done through the media, and the board also provided a press release to the media. It's media stories, and the party opposite is trying to tie those in together. And finally, I have offered to meet with the board, and we will make a decision after we go from that particular meeting.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Minister refuses to acknowledge her role in the closure of Talbot House. But members of this House know that the string of bad decisions made in her department not only set in motion the inevitable closure of the facility, but also continue to damage the reputation of Talbot House, the board of directors, and the dedicated staff long after they shut their doors. Mr. Speaker, her department is responsible for $420,000 of funding for the Recovery Centre every year. The minister knows full well that without that funding, Talbot House or any other recovery centre in the province would cease to exist. On April 17th, the minister told reporters that it was up to Talbot House if they decided they wanted to open up service again. So my question through you to the minister, does the minister really stand by that statement? Does she really believe the board of directors of Talbot House are standing in their own way?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, it's very important to know, and I agree with the member opposite, that we are the funder. So as a funder, those are taxpayers' dollars. And as the funder utilizing taxpayers' dollars, we have to be ensured that the services provided to the gentlemen at the recovery house are the services that are required to be provided, plus that the organization is functioning and meeting the standards in the agreement. It is our responsibility to do that. If we wouldn't have done that, I'm sure that the member opposite would be standing there, you know, with another story in hand. So the fact is that what we're doing is we did an organizational review, and based on that review, we will make a decision in the future what direction that we need to go in to ensure that those receiving the services receive the appropriate services and the taxpayers' money is being well spent. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes on his final supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, Talbot House has had quite a legacy in this province. They've been treating and helping young men get back on their feet for over 50 years. And the need for those services hasn't subsided, Mr. Speaker. The minister is responsible for the well-being of those vulnerable young men. And that didn't stop with the closure of Talbot House. The minister needs to swallow her pride and admit her mistakes. So my question through you to the minister, will the minister commit to reopening Talbot House or to at least getting out of the way so the community can have their important service back?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, the member opposite has to realize, I do understand that Talbot House has been in existence for many, many years, but it was only in 2008 that a service agreement was developed. And from that time, it is our job to go and do organizational reviews. We do them all the time. And to see if those requirements that are set out in a contract are being met. When they're not being met, as it's seen in the organizational review, then we have to make the appropriate decision for the future services for the people of Nova Scotia. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, the Department of Labour and Advanced Education is undergoing a review of all of its employment assistance services in Nova Scotia. So my question to the Minister is, will this review take into consideration the particular needs of persons with disabilities?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to the Honourable Member. I appreciate you raising this very important issue in the Chamber. I'm very proud of the extensive consultation and review that's going on with Employment Nova Scotia. We're at a time where, through the devolution of federal funding, we're now in the midst of combining organizations, or the work of organizations who originally had been funded federally with those who had been funded through the provincial government. And it's important to create a model that best serves all Nova Scotians. So that's exactly what we're doing with the review. There are no predetermined outcomes. We are carefully considering appropriate models. You know, it may be that there, you know, in some areas there may be a universal program providing those services. In other areas, it may be, depending on the population and the needs, that we need to get into more specialized services. But certainly those decisions have not been made, and we are doing a thorough consultation. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the collaborative partnership network of nine specialized employment agencies providing services for persons with disabilities is concerned for the future of their clients. They're concerned that the Department of Review will result in loss of specialized services for persons with disabilities. Mr. Speaker, 20% of Nova Scotians live with some type of disability. These agencies have a proven track record of meeting the need of people with disabilities and want to continue to offer the support to the community. They're concerned that the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education sees the service as another line item she can cut. So again to the Minister, will the Minister commit today to continue funding these vital employment agencies and maintaining specialized service delivery for persons with disabilities as it currently exists?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's pretty obvious after all the time I've spent in this House and the last 3 years as Minister of Labour I'm a great believer in due process. I've already said that there's no predetermined outcome. We are consulting with the groups. In fact, I had the opportunity within the last 2 or 3 weeks to meet with representatives from that very organization. They had the opportunity to speak to me, to explain the value and the breadth of the work that they do. I acknowledged at that time that I, you know, was very appreciative, and the government was very appreciative of the excellent track record that they have. They had plenty of opportunity to make their points and bring to my attention any of the, you know, the themes and the priorities that they wanted to present. And certainly all of that will be taken into consideration. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the issues related to dealing with clients with disabilities and multiple barriers are complex. The department circulated a questionnaire to all members of the collaborative partnership network, and the scope of the questions led respondents to believe that the department is going to mainstream services. Mr. Speaker, the disability community is rightly concerned about this. So again to the minister, will the minister commit to members of the House, members of the Collaborative Partnership Network, and all Nova Scotians with disabilities, that she will continue to invest in this service and maintain specialized employment services for persons with disabilities?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've been involved in supporting services to people with disabilities for the past 20 years. Both inside and outside of government. I fully understand their needs. I understand the priorities that the Collaborative Partnership Network has put forward. I have reassured them, as I am the House, that their concerns are going to certainly be very carefully considered. It may be that, as I explained earlier, that we have different models of service delivery, but certainly as a department and a government, we owe the citizens of this province a thorough review, an opportunity to get through that review and make decisions that will be in the best interests of all Nova Scotians. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Mr. Speaker, the interest relief program from the Department of Agriculture only applies to the Farm Loan Board. This makes it difficult for other entities such as the Canada Farm Credit or even the Royal Bank of Canada, which even has a dedicated agricultural loan consultant in the Annapolis Valley, cannot gain access to this program. My question to the Minister of Agriculture, why is the scope of this program so limited?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, because that's the way I wanted it.
The Honourable Member for King's West.
Well, you know, Mr. Speaker, the young farmers that I speak to will not be happy with that answer. In fact, it's quite insulting, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, families have had, for two and three generations, have used the RBC and the strong consultants that we've had in the Valley, and again, Farm Canada Credit. So my question to the Minister, will the Minister expand this program and allow other bodies to access the interest relief program from the Department of Agriculture other than the Farm Loan Board?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've told my staff that we would revisit this policy, and I want to make it clear that taxpayers in Nova Scotia fund this interest relief program. I see no reason why we want to give a pass to the banks, who offer nothing special to new entrants in this province. So if the member can stand up and say why he thinks Nova Scotia taxpayers should give a benefit to the banks when this is a benefit for new entrants who borrow from the people of Nova Scotia with a lending institution that's sponsored by the people of Nova Scotia to enhance agricultural development in this province. We are a lender. We have a perfectly good reason to be a lender. We are the most compassionate. We are the most compassionate lender in all the lending circles, Mr. Speaker. But I did make a commitment to the Federation of Agriculture that we would revisit it. I think members can tell by my tone how keen I am on that change. But that's not to say that I'm not willing to take a second look at it.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I do appreciate the second look, but we do have to realize that the real benefit here is to farmers, and especially to young farmers in Nova Scotia. That's who will get the benefit. Mr. Speaker, agriculture supports many small communities and businesses in Nova Scotia. Yesterday's announcement about the merger of Dalhousie University and the Nova Scotia Agricultural College was a way and a time to highlight how important agriculture is to our province. In order for farmers to have interest relief, the department must expand the interest relief program, and the minister has the power to do so. My question to the minister, when will the NDP government expand the interest relief program from the Department of Agriculture so farmers can gain access to it?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Mr. Speaker, farmers who can gain access to it certainly have to qualify for the criteria of new entrant. If they are someone who has gone to another lender, they can come to the Farm Loan Board, pay out that existing loan with that lender, and still qualify for the interest forgiveness at the Farm Loan Board, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Irving Shipbuilding Contract is the single largest shipbuilding contract in Canadian history. Irving won the bid based on merit, and we as Nova Scotians couldn't be prouder. However, when the province decided to extend a loan of up to $304 million, $260 million of that forgivable, we start to wonder what the government is up to. Mr. Speaker, my question for you to the Acting Minister of Economic Development and Tourism is what alternative funding options were exhausted before this loan was authorized?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What this government did was ensure that we had the best possible application to win that contract, Mr. Speaker. And we stand by our commitment to winning that contract.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, we know the contract is a huge boost to our province. That's not our concern. Our concern is the process the government went through in order to grant this funding and the structure of the loan that was granted. And, Mr. Speaker, my question again, did the NDP government look at even one alternative besides giving Irving a forgivable loan?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We did our due diligence. We canvassed all opportunities, and we made sure that Nova Scotia and Irving Shipyard was in the best position to win that contract.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Now, Mr. Speaker, we all understand the goal was to win the bid by reducing the bid cost that Irving provided. But $300 million is a lot of money. and Irving's a big company. Nova Scotians want to know if other alternatives were considered. And, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the acting minister is, did any other bidder, BC or Quebec, for example, give a $300 million loan to a multi-billion dollar corporation?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We look forward to having thousands and thousands of Nova Scotians working here in Nova Scotia when this contract gets up and running. I understand $300 million is a large amount of money, Mr. Speaker, but $25 billion is a lot larger.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Transport.
Give it to him.
Infrastructure renewal. I know he's been a lonely minister over there this session, and I knew he needed a question, so I brought him one from Digby and Annapolis. Mr. Speaker, I've had a lot of calls this past few weeks from a new road that's been built in my riding, the Mary Jane Riley Road. And this road that was built just this past few months is breaking up. And I'm just wondering if the minister is aware of this. And also, if he is aware of it, is there any inspector in his department that's watching these roads? Because I brought a piece of this pavement with me, Mr. Speaker. I was going to bring it here and table it, but I was told not to, but it's in my office. And this pavement is not much thicker than some of the asphalt shingle on roofs in this province. And I don't think you're aware of this, Mr. Speaker, the minister, but this has got to be looked into. We have a brand new road there being built that's breaking up in small chunks. So I'm wondering if the minister's aware of this. And if he is his inspectors inspecting these roads? And is this going on all over the province? Because if it is, there's going to be a lot of new repaving to be done in this province within 2 years.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you. I appreciate the question from the member opposite. I'm not particularly, I of course know of Mary Jane Riley and the importance of that road in your community. This is the first time I've heard of this concern, but I can assure the member opposite and members of the House, it's not the first time that I've heard from members or I've heard from people involved with the projects across the province when it comes to paving. When there are concerns about jobs that have just been completed of this nature, we will make sure the inspectors are out having a look at that particular one. I want to assure members opposite that when a job is not done correctly, this minister takes it seriously and there will be a follow-up. And I thank you for bringing it to your attention.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on his first supplementary.
I was just wondering, Mr. Speaker, these companies that are paving these roads, are they bonded? Do they have to come back and repair them? Is there a time limit that they have to come back? Because if it goes on too long, they may not come back to fix it. So I think it's something the minister has to get on right away. Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you. Yes, and something will be done. And bond aside, the importance of highways and how the job is done by these companies, they will be held to their task.
Order, order, please. Time allotted for oral questions put by members to ministers. I will now recognize the Honourable Government Host Leader on an introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the East Gallery is Father Albert McPherson. Father McPherson is head of the Augustinian Healing Missions, and he's out of Lawrence, Massachusetts, but more importantly, he's from Roaches Road, Mr. Speaker, in the Waterford, and one cross he has to bear is his sister's married to me, Mr. Speaker. So even through his healing ministry, I don't think his prayers can work on me, Mr. Speaker. So, Mr. Speaker, I wish the House welcome. Wish Father McPherson a warm welcome to the House. And enjoy the evening.